Welcome, everyone, to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I am Brian, Ruben, and
I'm Jim,
my co-host, as always, my awesome co-host. And we do have a guest this week joining us from, Brendan, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Portland, Oregon.
Oh, so you're in my time zone. All right. Calling from Portland, Oregon, we have Brendan Anthony. Now,
oh, God, he's one of those. Are you on, like, a kerosene-powered computer?
Oh, no, I lost you.
Oh, no.
Oh.
You have us back?
I assume it was a joke about unicycles or hipsters or something.
It was.
You are so accurate. No, I was asking if you were coding this on a kerosene-powered computer.
Yeah, in my cabin in the woods.
So, no. folks, if you don't know, Brendan is working on this game. Are you working on it by yourself? Do you have
I'm working on it almost entirely by myself. Oh. I've got a buddy who's helping me with some writing, and I've hired an artist who's doing some stuff. But I'm the only full-time person.
Okay. Yeah. Well, excuse me. Brendan is working on a game called Rodina, which is this amazing-looking procedural generated – God, those words get me hot – procedural generated space combat landing trading fighting looking awesome thing. So, but before that, Brendan, you worked for some prestigious background before we even get to the space game. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your history with game programming and what you worked on before you got to Rodina here.
Sure. I've been a game programmer for almost 10 years, and nice. I've been lucky enough right after college to get a job at my like absolute favorite company, which was Bethesda. And yeah, really exciting for me. I was a huge fan of Morrowind. Like,
I had
fan sites. I was, you know, interviewing people before the game came. I was just a huge Elder Scrolls junkie. And so when I finally got that job and, you know, met Todd Howard and everything, it was a real thrill. So I got to work on Oblivion and Fallout 3.
Wow.
And then moved on with my career, but it was just a great introduction to the industry. I was, you know, couldn't be more happy with my time there.
I can't imagine what it must be like to jump into such like prestigious company. Because I mean, say what you want about some of their games, but there's a lot of love for Bethesda.
Oh yeah, and it's great because they really, you know, they really care. Like, they're a bunch of people who really care about making good products, and the people in charge are, you know, just really passionate, and Todd Howard is a great guy. You know, it's funny, the initial thrill of being like, ooh, you know, meeting people wears off, of course, pretty quickly. But I do have a lot of respect for Todd and the whole group there. I learned a lot.
When I was a professional journalist, I got to meet him a couple of times, and he's a character.
He's definitely a
character, and he's probably one of the most memorable personalities I got to meet during my time as a professional journalist.
Well, I'll tell him you said that. I'm sure he'll be pleased.
Yeah, he was a very nice, very generous guy. He was always very polite and always very positive.
Yeah.
So what did you work on at Bethesda?
So I was a gameplay programmer, which was great because I'm not super technical. And I, you know, I'm not much of a systems guy. I don't really like tools, but I really love gameplay. And so this is sort of a funny story. The first day I come into the company, and I'm so excited. I'm there at Bethesda for the first time, and I'm, you know, can't believe it. And my first task comes in, and it says implement fireballs. And I just knew, like, okay, I've made a good decision in my life. Like, this life's going in a good direction. But yeah, I was in charge of things like magic for Oblivion. And
that's one of my favorite parts of any Elder Scrolls game. So thank you.
Well, I worked with Steve Meister, who was one of the guys who's worked there a long time, and he was in charge of the magic system. So I kind of, you know, under his tutelage, learned a lot of those systems, and I did explosions and, you know, fireballs and arrows and projectiles and a lot of general gameplay stuff. I was kind of a generalist.
Right. And what did you do for Fallout 3?
For Fallout, I was more focused on projectiles, because there's more variation. There's, you know, lasers and bullets. And we had to deal with the VATS, the slow motion systems. And I also did a lot of physics stuff. So a lot of the Havoc programming I shared with another guy, Mike Delaney. And yeah, it was a blast. I love working on that. I'm so proud of, you know, to have worked on something so exciting.
I got to tell you a little side note about Fallout 3. I got it as a gift for my birthday a couple years ago, and I love the other Fallout games, so I was really excited to play this. And I played it for 2 days straight because it was over a weekend, and all of a sudden I was getting nightmares and I couldn't sleep.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I would like lie in my bed and stare at the dark waiting for something to jump out at me.
I would say mission accomplished. Then. Yes. Like job well done.
Yes, yeah. Job well done. You're I have not played the game since, even though I own it. I'm too terrified to touch it.
What was it?
I think it was the mutants that looked like zombies. Plus, there's always been a ever since I read On the Beach in high school, the prospect of a nuclear wasteland has always freaked me the fuck out.
Yeah.
So
you should watch A Boy and His Dog sometime.
No, I don't think I should. That sounds like you're baiting me, Jim.
Oh no, you should watch A Boy and His Dog sometime.
I don't think I want
it,
to.
It is, and make sure you watch it with your girlfriend because she'll be charmed by it as well. It's got Don Johnson in it.
Oh,
a very young Don Johnson and his telepathic dog.
Telepathic dog.
Oh yeah, this movie. You watch this movie and you'll just be like, oh, now I know where Fallout came from.
So it's not like the cat from outer space with the telepathic cat. It's a telepathic.
It's worse.
Oh, because I love that movie. I'll be honest. So that's not a bad. That's not saying it's not bad. But good job on Fallout 3 because I gotta say the VAT system in that game was remarkable. It really was.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, and it was cool to see it come together. Personally, that was only my second game, proper in the games industry, and. I hadn't seen something come together from the ground up because I had worked on Oblivion. I came into Oblivion like halfway through. So it was really cool to be like, I'm not sure if this is going to work. And then to see it, come together. And I did the stuff where, if you shoot a super mutant, sometimes their head will explode or something like that. And so
that was so gratifying.
Yeah, no, and I helped out that just that kind of stuff, in slow motion is killer. So I loved that stuff.
Well, and I think VATS gave an approachability factor to the game. For people who are not Twitch FPS players that still wanted to play an RPG, where you could say, okay, well, I'm going to just play the combat out turn-based, and that's fine. So for those people who are more explorer-type people than combat people.
Which is definitely me.
I think
not just that, but the Fallout, series was turn-based. And, you do want to – we were changing it so much, and you didn't want to – I know a lot of fans of Fallout 1 and 2 – we're really worried about whether the, game was going to be close enough and all that. So, even though we were bringing it into 3D and everything, you wanted to sort of preserve that experience as much as possible.
And you have to worry about your own personal safety if the guys over at No Mutants Allowed find out where you live.
Exactly. Yeah.
Let's not talk about them. I don't want to get any heat. So you're working at Bethesda. You're doing these great projects. I have to ask, though, what was the impetus for you leaving that and starting to work on your own project?
Sure. Well, I left a few years ago, and Bethesda's in D.C. on the other side of the country.
Right.
And the reason I left was purely personal. A friend of mine wanted to – this is going to sound a little crazy, but wanted to learn how to ride motorcycles and take like a long – several month-long trip across the country. And, I guess after working at Bethesda for a few years, it was, that was my dream job, but I knew I didn't want to be at my dream job for the rest of my life. So I decided to do that. So I eventually, left the company and ended up taking a motorcycle with a friend of mine. And we traveled for about 4 months and ended up in Portland. So kind of an adventure. It was, just really great, experience. And I've been in Portland ever since. I love it up here. And I've been working in mobile games for a few years. And then a little more than a year ago, that sort of ended up collapsing. And here we are.
Wait, what collapsed?
The company that I was working for ended up being shut down by their parent company. So we were all laid off. But, it's funny. At the time, it was, distressing to me. I had never, been out of work except by choice. But it ended up being this incredible blessing. If I hadn't have been laid off at the time, then I wouldn't have been able to produce the tech demo that I did last year, which I released right about the time, the video for which I released right about the time when Notch announced his game. And that was kind of something that if I had missed out on, it would have been really, really crushing because, you know, as you know, Notch's game is very close to what I'm doing. So it's...
Yeah, in some ways. Yeah, but, yeah. But he put that on hold now. Did you hear about that?
I did hear about that. I'm trying not to jinx it because it would be great if that happened. But
well, you got to. I mean, they were talking about him on another podcast. He must be under so much scrutiny.
Oh, yeah. And he's so rich now. It's got to be hard to focus.
Exactly.
You know, I'm sort of clawing for my life here. But he's, you know, he's sort of sitting pretty. So I imagine that he's not quite as panicked.
If you're clawing for your life, why are you making a space game?
I know.
You should be making some kind of Angry Pigs clone or something. I mean, yeah. What are you doing?
I know.
Space games don't make money.
Oh, I know. I'll say one thing that, you know, this whole idea of a game where you can sail around seamlessly and go down to a planet's surface and where it's a little bit like a freelancer I really was inspired by Daggerfall quite a bit. And the idea
just got me really hot, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That might be a little adult, but I love until Skyrim. I have to say Daggerfall was my favorite.
Daggerfall was great. And I loved the scale of it. It was so cool that there was hundreds of towns and all these provinces. It just completely changed the relationship that I had with the game. And I don't know. I feel like there's this gulf in there's this vacuum, you know, in the market. And I think the fact that Notch did his thing and everybody's really excited about the possibility of his game, I don't know, it just sort of proves to me that people are looking for something like this, where it's this full, you know, Star Trek Serenity style experience where you can, you know, get the whole experience. So
okay, let's jump right in then. Give us the pitch. Give us like the rundown of what Rodina is.
Okay, that's difficult. I've been trying to polish my elevator pitch and it's going terribly.
Well, you don't have to do an elevator pitch. We got time, so take your time. I want to hear. I've been excited about this game since I first heard of it because my dream game is where you can like fly around space, land on a planet, get out, do stuff on the planet, then get back in your ship and fly to another planet. And that's what this kind of sounds like. So
yeah. So that is the idea, the goal is to make a seamless RPG, Daggerfall-style RPG set in a solar system. That's sort of a long-term goal. The first release of Rodina is going to be a game where you can fly your spaceship around and get into dogfights with aliens, but then also stop piloting your ship and walk around it and, you know, interact with the machines. And, you know, maybe there might be some, you know, problems in the ship that you need to deal with, you know, fires or something. But then also you can sail down to a planet's surface. And so we'll have these big procedurally generated planets. They're all full scale, like bigger than Earth. And you can sail down from space all the way down to the planet's surface, land, and then get back out of your ship and walk around and do things. And so the gameplay is going to be pretty simple at first. I've got this story, this background, but essentially it's you're flying around trying to collect debris that is a result of a ship explosion. And you sail down to the planet's surface, pick up the debris and its upgrades and missiles and that sort of thing. And the whole time you're fighting off aliens that are trying to sort of prevent you from doing this. So
cool.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, the goal is that if it's successful, I'd really like to keep working on it. And I'd like, if people bought it, to eventually do things like have gunplay, you know, you fight with the aliens, you know, maybe you board their ship and fight with them on their ships and that sort of stuff. That's sort of a ways off, but that's the idea. I'd like to get there.
Now, you're not going to take my awesome guns away in the first expansion pack, are you? You're not going to do that to me, are you?
I would never do that to you, Brian.
Yay. Oh, God. Okay, I'm still bitter. You know what I'm talking about?
I've had no idea, but it's just a statement of values. I would never take
that. I bring this up a lot, but Privateer, you know Wing Commander Privateer.
Yeah.
Well, in Privateer, you work your way up in the story to gain this amazing alien gun. And you have to use this gun to kill this alien invasion force, but you get to keep it. You get to fly around. It makes you almost, like, not totally invincible, but it makes you a real badass.
Hmm.
Well, in the expansion, that gun gets stolen the first thing.
Right.
And you never get it back.
Oh, that's awful.
I had to stop playing. I was so angry.
Yeah, I mean, at least they could let you try and get it back. That's
apparently you can never get it back. I after I read that somewhere, I'm like, I'm done. Don't even care anymore.
So this is all
in one solar system with multiple planets.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Well, no, that's fine. I mean, the level of fidelity you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Multiple solar systems. That totally makes sense.
Well, that was the thinking, years ago when I first started thinking about this. Yeah, of course, the first thought is, like, I want it to be as big as possible.
Oh, yeah.
And then I start, trying to think about ways to make it a little bit more realistic. And at the time, my thought was, well, rather than, making a whole galaxy or whatever, maybe it would just be one solar system. And maybe rather than having a solar system with cities and, a lot of people, maybe it would be colonists. And so you just have small settlements. And now that I'm ended up actually making this game and working on my own, my idea is to still do that, but like rewind the timeline. So you're the first settler, so there's no settlements right now, but maybe in the future, like I said, maybe you'd get more people, maybe you'd get more things happening. But, for now, I'm trying to keep things sort of as reasonable as possible.
So when you go down to the planet, what's going to be there? Is it going to be empty? Will there be like alien cities? Will there be little settlements? What will be down there?
No, right now it's pretty empty. You're going down to collect these upgrades, essentially, and to fight the aliens that might be flying around there. I've got some ideas for adding some small things like, turrets and things that you can interact with right now. But as far as settlements really of any kind, that's something I'll, hope to do in the future.
It still sounds exciting. So how big can a solar system be? Like how many planets and moons, I'm guessing, and stuff like that?
Yeah, the solar system right now is it's just a few planets. There's four planets and some asteroids and some moons. I can make it any size I want, of course. In terms of its actual physical size, it's, billions of meters across. So it's pretty huge. I'm hoping – again, if it's successful, I can add planets and updates. Right now, it's the inner solar system. So there's rocky planets and then the asteroid belt. But then eventually I would add, gas giants and more moons and that sort of stuff.
Okay, so the plan is to start small. And are you going to like beta sell this thing like they did with Minecraft? You're going to start small with this this little bit alpha and then build it up from there like they did with.
Yeah, that's the idea. I mean, I'd like to make it as solid as an experience as I can. When people download it, I want it to be fun and want it to be a full game. But at the same time, I want to add to it over time. And I think that would be great to be able to like add features and content. And I hope that people would stay interested in it over that amount of time, would have to say.
Well, I mean, I guess if you kept fleshing it out, like you said, you're the first like person there. So if maybe like you're in advance of some seed ships that are bringing in some humans to settle the place and like eventually in a later expansion or whatever, they come in and start settling and you have to deal with that.
Totally. And like I said, the eventual goal would be to have like a full Daggerfall style thing where there's like towns and factions and you can sail around from planet to planet doing doing errands and adventures and all that stuff. But again, like that's way beyond my one person scope right now, so it's kind of an eventual goal.
So tell us about the procedural generation engine you're building for this thing.
Sure. All the planets are generated on the computer's graphics card, on the GPU. And they're just made with shaders. So I have a shader that just decides what the planet looks like and what its features are. And it's just using pretty standard procedural algorithms. It's all the procedural algorithms themselves are all handcrafted. So like I'll go in and personally decide like what this planet looks like and what its features are. And then it's all sent back to the CPU to be put together. So you get the physics and you get the geometry. And the really thing that I like the best about the procedural generation is that, when you're sailing around in space, you can see like the high level features, where continents are and mountain ranges. But the same algorithm that decides like what that looks like, when you actually sail down to the planet, that same algorithm is like drawing the actual mountains and the actual continents. So you go down there and like it's the same thing. It's really cool to see it sort of come into being as you get closer.
And you can totally land on these things too.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like the whole goal is to have it be this full experience. Where I always wanted, when I was watching Star Trek, you know, to actually be able to, you know, I was always dissatisfied with space games because I don't want to just pilot a ship. You know, I don't want to just run around Mass Effect style. Like I want the whole thing. I want top to bottom. And so, yeah, you can fly around in space, fly down to any planet, land it, walk around. That's the basis of it all.
See, that is super exciting to me because that's basically what I've always wanted in a game where you're like, you're kind of like, you know, like you said, Firefly, where you have a ship and you do jobs, you get out, you get a job, or you drive around the planet or wherever, or you go back to your ship, you do your job. And
oh, totally. And the other thing that I really think is that, you know, this is sort of funny, but the other inspiration I had for this game was Spaceballs, because I always really loved the ship, Lone Star ship, right, which was his Winnebago.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a great ship.
And it was cool, and I always got this, I was stuck with this thought that, like, you know, when you're in space, your ship really is your home, but it's also your vehicle. And I like the idea of being able to have, like, you know, your bedroom and just all the things that would make it yours. And so that's the kind of thing that I'm hoping that people will like
about. I was going to totally ask about that. So you'll be able, this will be like, not like a little fire thing. This will be a larger ship that you could walk around in to your engine room and your quarters and your cargo bay and all that kind of thing. That's what
totally,
we're talking about.
Totally. Yeah. It's, and it's going to have an airlock and all that stuff. And, I mean, you know, well, the other thing too is, right now I'm working on putting in some more machines and some more tile sets. So there's some variation in the interior, but, you'll be able to, like, drag and drop different, rooms in and different machines and, like, customize the layout of your ship so that it's all, you know, like whatever room layout you want, you can set
two,
that up.
Two things that are important to me in that. One is I would like to have a robot pet that I can have in my ship, right? Like an R2-D2 that I can send to fix things.
Absolutely.
That would be really cool. The other thing would be in an homage to Spaceballs, that the final upgrade in the tech tree for your engines should be ludicrous speed.
I love it. The plaid.
Yeah. no, I think that's exactly right. And robot pets, in fiction as in life, we should really just have all robot pets.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very important.
Totally. Or genetically engineered dogs or something.
Something, yeah.
So, see, I've always wondered why in most space games we can't just get up from our little chair and walk around our ship. You know, they never let you, they very rarely let you do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm finding out as I'm building the thing, just, you know, just how much work it all is. And, you know, it's right now there's a lot more engine and features than there is game to it. You know,
right.
You can fly around and get in these battles, but there's not like much of a campaign, you know, it's more open-ended. So it's kind of a balancing act. You know, it's hard to sell a game that's a walk around a ship simulator, you know?
I don't think so, man.
Yeah.
I don't think so, because how awesome would it be? Like, you get in a fight with aliens and you get some damage, and after the fight's done, if you survive it, you're kind of drifting. You got to get up from your chair, run back to the engine room and try and fix your ship before some other aliens find you. And you're like working. And then all of a sudden you hear like a proximity alarm. You're like, you got to run back to the cockpit.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like it just has so many great possibilities.
Yeah.
And you know, I really, you know, in the long hours and the late nights, I think about, you know, the future and hopefully getting it to, you know, to that Daggerfall in space that I was talking about, just cause it's just such a rich, you know, rich, system, a lot of possibilities.
Yeah. There's so much you can do. Like even docking with another ship to do a trade, you dock with their airlock and, you know, you walk and you meet the other crew and you have a talk with them and you walk back out and, like out of gas, you know, when the two ships docked.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. Oh. I can't talk enough about all the different cool things you can do. I want to, be able to walk around like in space on your ship, like with magnetic boots, you know, I want all kinds of stuff I want to do. You know, it's just a matter of getting there, and it's going really well so far. I'm hoping to release the game in a few months.
Really?
But, well, yeah, but I always say that I said that 6 months ago, so we'll see. But, you know, I've got a hard date at some point where money runs out. And so, I can definitely guarantee that the game will be released. you know, it's just a matter of getting there.
I got to say, I'm going to be there on day one.
Oh, I appreciate it.
I mean, even in an early stage, this sounds like something I would both want to play and support. Because, well, damn.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I hope that's true. I think what I really hope is that people see the potential and are willing to support it and you know, kind of see what happens, you know.
Well, I think if they see the potential in a game like Minecraft, which when I first tried it back in like 2010, I bought the alpha because everyone was talking about it.
Yeah.
And there was nothing. There was nothing in that game except, you know, build a shelter or dig yourself in a hole before the zombies get you. That's really all there was. And I tried it again recently and they added a ton of stuff.
You know, I didn't get in on like the Minecraft ground floor, so I don't really know what the journey was like. But
well, I don't either because I stopped playing it after like two playthroughs because it was like, what is this? I don't want to build my house. I just want there to be a house that I can interact with. I don't want to build it brick by brick, but some people love that. So obviously, so. Now, since you can walk around in your ship, can you like what can you do with your ship? Can you like you could fix your engines and you could pilot it and you could like bring in cargo? Like, what are the possibilities of things you can do while you're on your ship?
Sure. Well, right now I'm focusing on some story elements. So this is actually something I have never told anybody yet. But I'm working with my buddy Andrew Scher, who's a writer, and we're doing like Elder Scrolls style books, you know, that you would find like that give some backstory. And so there's a computer that's like an archives that you know, once you find these books and things, it'd be stored on there. So you go there to read those, which was always, I always wanted to do that because that was one of my favorite things about the Elder Scrolls series, but it's the kind of thing that's not for everybody. So it would sort of stay out of the way for
some people. Like, keep your damn reading out of my damn game.
Exactly. But yeah, like there'd be a computer that's in charge of the ship status, so you'd go there to like initiate repairs or to choose what ammo you're using and that sort of thing. Right now, most of the interaction is with the computers in the ship. What I want to do eventually, actually, what I'd like to do after the first release, I'd like to do a simulation pass where I put in more simulated stuff like having a coolant system on the ship and have, you know, more things like, you know, air density and, you know, flying out the airlock and that sort of thing.
Yeah, life support, fire suppression, that kind of thing.
The kind of things that are sort of a more simulated approach rather than like a gamey approach. That's sort of the first step. Right now, the real appeal though is being able to customize it, you know, be able to like, you know, set up the layout and define where your bedroom is and that sort of thing.
Now, do you do that before you start the game or can you do that while you're in the game? Can you define how the interior and even exterior of your ship are looking?
Yeah, you do that in the game. There's a computer in the airlock that you activate and you use the like some of the resources that you've required to, you know, define the layout, and you can do it whenever you like. Right now, it's only the interiors, but you know, exteriors. It's one of those wish list things.
Well, and that was like the next thing I was going to ask about is you said the goal, at least initially, is to be flying around these planets and down to these planets to get this debris.
Yeah.
To upgrade your ship. So my question is, I guess I have two questions. One, do you just have one ship that you're going to be upgrading all the time? And two, what are some of the upgrades you can put on these ships or ships?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the upgrades are things like new kinds of ammo, new weapons, maybe some better shields that, you know, mostly gameplay type stuff. Right now, none of it's like reflected visually.
Right.
And there's some other gameplay type things like we have a planet that is like Venus. It's hot and acidic. And so you need a special kind of shielding to be able to go down there in the first place.
Oh, very nice. So that,
yeah. There's like different, you know, gamey things. Right now you only have one ship, although this is the kind of thing that I imagine won't last too long with the game's moddable, right? So I imagine.
Awesome.
Yeah. That won't last too long. I imagine people would be modding in, you know, new the capability to have new ships.
Or, someone's going to put in Serenity. You know that's going to be one of the first ships. It's going to be obviously Serenity.
Yeah, totally. So I mean, sort of out of the box, it's that experience. But, you know, I do want to have the ability for people to, you know, change whatever they want.
Now, how easy is it to mod this game? Is it like XML files, text files, that sort of thing?
Yeah, the all of the gameplay code is run in Lua, which is a scripting language. And so it's really easy. I'm not sure the extent right now of how you know, how much I'll reveal to people about the code and all that. But whether you whether I tell people or not, they'll figure it out. And it's as simple as writing new scripts. And so that's that'll be pretty easy. And as far as all of the art is concerned, all my art is exported from Blender. So anybody who's got Blender, I'll release the exporter, and anybody who's got that can make their own art.
Oh, nice. Now, Jim, I'm sorry. I've been asking all the questions. I don't mean to take over here. Do you have any questions that I haven't let you
get? No, I'm good.
Okay.
You're doing a great job, Brian.
I didn't want to, you know, monopolize everything. So tell me about the flight modeling and the combat modeling. Is it going to be Newtonian? Is it going to be more on the arcadey side? Do you have a choice?
And, yeah, it's not. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
And I was also wondering, do you also have a choice? Like you were talking about with the simulation stuff, like your coolant system and stuff. Will you have a choice between keeping it more, I guess, gamey, or will you have a choice to make it either more gamey or more simmy? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think as far as like the choices for, you know, basic gameplay, that'll come through mods. My feeling is, I mean, you know, my vision for the game is inspired by reality more than realistic. It's not Newtonian, but at the same time, I want the game to feel like you're flying in space. You know, I don't want it to feel like you're sailing through an ocean. So, you know, it's not as complicated as, say, Kerbal Space Program. You know, it's you know.
Oh my God, that is.
Yeah, to get off a planet, you just kind of have to hit up, right? But you know, I want the feel of it to be reminiscent of being in space. You know, I want it to feel like that, and the same goes for the simulation stuff. You know, I don't want the coolant to be a coolant systems or really any of the systems to be a burden so much as just an interesting hook for gameplay. That's kind of the approach that I take towards it, anyway.
No, okay, that sounds good, because you want to keep it approachable, but you know, you still want it to feel like you're, you know, in a
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the idea of game. You know, I mean, I've played games where you stop moving. You know, you cut your thrusters and your ship stops moving, and that's definitely not what I'm going for. It should feel like you're in space, but at the same time, you know, I'm inspired more by games like, you know, I do want it to be approachable, like Star Fox or something. Like I want people to be able to pick it up and sort of get it immediately.
Oh, okay. No, that's good, because, you know, especially if you're trying to hit both the space crowd and everybody else, you want it to be approachable.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny, because the folks who I don't know what your feelings are about this, but a lot of the folks I've talked to who are really into space games, you know, really love like the Kerbal approach, where it's realistic and Newtonian and everything. And that's one of those things that I do hope that mods will take care of, that if, you know, if there's another vacuum there.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the video I did last night, but I had 3 or 4 friends kind of guide me through Kerbal on a Google Hangout.
I did check that out, yeah.
And that is complicated shit. And
it is.
I love that you can do that, and for people who want to do that, that's great. But I just want to get in the thing and fly, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, though, but I saw when you landed on the moon, and you seemed pretty fucking excited about it. It was pretty amazing.
I was about to say, that was exhilarating.
Yeah. Well, that's a hell of an achievement. I mean, it's like in Kerbal, I can't even find the moon with both hands, a flashlight, and a map.
Right. Yeah, you feel like you could actually go to the real moon now. Like, you've got this under your belt.
Oh, you know, yeah. Well, I was telling the guys, the first space game I ever really played was Lunar Lander. So it kind of like it was a little like little precursor to that. So
I've done this before.
What were some of the early space games you played that helped inspired you to make Rodina, or just inspired you in general?
Oh yeah, this is going to be a little embarrassing. I was a Nintendo kid. Only 30, so I was like an NES. I grew up on NES and Super NES. So like in the days when Wing Commander came out, I was playing Legend of Zelda and that sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, for me, the real inspiration is games like Star Fox and Metroid. Not because of their gameplay, because I'd play Star Fox and I'd be like, I don't really care about this corridor, you know, I want to go off and fly around the planet, and I want to I want to see what's inside this ship. And same thing with Metroid. Like, when I loved Super Metroid was awesome to me, but in the beginning of the game, the ship comes down and Samus jumps out of it. I'm thinking like, what's in that thing? I want to see the inside of that ship. So that's kind of what got me started.
That is totally fine, man. I've never played those games, but I do get where you're coming from. So have you, like, now that you're kind of making a space game, have you maybe gone back to some of those older space games?
Yeah, you know, I had played Freelancer a while back, and that was awesome. You know, I've never played Wing Commander, which is, like, one that I really need to get back.
Dude!
I know, right?
It's, like, $6 on GOG.com.
Right now, it's just a matter of time, you know? But But for sure, like, that and frankly, any other recommendations, I would gladly pick up.
Well, the one you should really play, well, I would
free
say...
Free space.
Well, no. I would go back even further, and I would read the plot for Wing Commander 1 and 2 on Wikipedia.
Okay.
And then I would buy Wing Commander Privateer.
Okay.
And, maybe if you want, watch some of the cinematics for the first two games, because that'll add a little bit of the flavor for the universe. Mm-hmm. But... I think Privateer is probably one of the best games of its type. And it sounds like, because you do jobs, you land on planets, and you get out. But you don't really walk around, but you do have these different spots in the space stations you can go to. Like, you can go to the bar, and you can go to the commodities exchange, and you can go to the Mercenaries Guild, or not the Mercenaries Guild, but the Merchants Guild.
You know, it's amazing how many people have tried to remake that game and failed.
Yeah. There have been three remakes. There's been two graphical remakes and an ASCII remake.
Yeah, but I mean, even games that try to just pay homage to it and don't, you know, it's like XCOM remakes. It's the most simple formula in the world. Just copy it. But nobody can seem to manage it.
I think they want to add their own flair to it.
Yeah, they do, but then they omit the things that actually made the game good. Yeah.
How does Freelancer fall on that spectrum? Is it in the same vein? Because it sounds sort of similar.
Freelancer is kind of a progression of that formula, but mm-hmm. I like to call Freelancer more of an action RPG in space where your avatar is the ship.
Right.
Yeah, because you actually are chugging health and magic potions.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But Freelancer is a good example of an accessible entry to the genre.
Right.
Because that was like the first game that really focused on mouse control.
Yeah,
for this
exactly.
Game.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really worried about that because I have this full hot ass setup, and I'm like, wait, no, I need my joystick and my throttle. Thank you very much.
Right.
And, but no, it got mouse control so right. It was amazing.
Well, I think mouse control is really the sweet spot for space games anymore, because it's like you can't expect everybody to have the joystick and everything. And then you end up with the opposite side of the spectrum, which is like EVE Online, which sadly is probably the reality of space combat, is
right.
Just kind of like, you know, run program 5.
Okay. Right.
Orbit at this distance, fire this gun, sit, wait.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the mouse control, where you move the cursor around and then the ship just chases the cursor where you put it, is fine.
I don't
because
know, man.
That's kind of like designating what you want. And then the ship's computer just figures out how to get
well,
there.
I don't know, man.
And that's fine with me.
I'll be honest. It's weird. I've been playing some X3 Albion Prelude, which took a while to get into. And I'm still not fully 100% with it. But first I tried it with my joystick. And the game didn't like my joystick. I don't know why. So I played it with a mouse for a while. And then they just released an update that supports a 360 gamepad, mm-hmm. which I just got one for the first time.
Yeah.
So I've been playing it with a 360 gamepad, and it feels right, you know?
Yeah, I use the 360 controller for when I'm developing, and it does. It feels really good, and it's sort of a good compromise if you want that joystick experience. But like you said, not everybody has a joystick, so it's
right. And it's weird, but a lot of people have gamepads. Like I actually tried. Have you ever heard of TIE Fighter? Have you played that one?
Oh yeah, I didn't play it, but I of course heard of it. Yeah,
excellent. I tried playing that with 360 gamepad, and it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
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 I mean, it's
a good compromise, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised how many games I'm going back to that I own that I never used with. I use with a keyboard. I'm like, this is all right, and I'm playing with a gamepad now. Like Beat Hazard. Like I was playing Beat Hazard with a keyboard, and it was fun. You plug in a gamepad, holy shit! It's a different game.
Mm.
It's a better game. So yeah, I mean, mouse is good, but I think gamepad. I'm starting to think gamepad might be the sweet spot.
Yeah, gamepad's pretty great. And the other thing that I like about the gamepad is it really, like I said, I develop thinking about the controller first. And
oh, okay.
It sort of concentrates your thinking about the controls. It's, you know, it's especially with a game like this, it's really easy to think like, oh, if I'm playing with a mouse and keyboard and I need to do something new, I'll just like throw another key on there. You know, they'll just have to press the, you know, the Q key to do that or whatever. But you know, having the controller first, it really focuses your thinking about like how you're designing the interactions and, you know, are things going to be context sensitive or do you want them to be specific actions and how it all works? It really focuses things.
Yeah, I can see that because you only have a certain amount of buttons.
And a
good game can let you change those, but still, when you build for that, yeah, you want to be focused. Like I got Mark of the Ninja. Talk about a non-space game for a while. I got Mark of the Ninja a while back, and I tried it on the keyboard first. It was all right, and that was the first game I tried with the gamepad, and I was like, oh my god, this is so much more fluid.
Yeah,
I could imagine that game just feeling deadly on the keyboard, though.
It was rough on the keyboard. It was rough. I mean,
The other ninja game that kills me is it's something Tower of Ninjas that's up on Steam,
I don't know. And
I got that, and I was pissed because it doesn't support the gamepad, and I'm like, what do you mean you want me to play this ninja game with the keyboard? What?
They promised
gamepad support in an update. I should check it.
Is that also like a 2D? Because 2D games like platformers or beat 'em ups are like they are brutal on keyboards.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is like an endless descent kind of like a Metroid-y. Well, not really Metroid. It reminds me kind of like Ghosts and Goblins in that you're just continuing to progress. Well, it's left to right, but it's constantly going down, right? And so you're fighting on levels, and you're trying to progress downward through this tower. And it's kind of like Mark of the Ninja, you know, where you're doing, like, stealth takedowns and like, magic ninja things and that. But the game gets pretty hot and fast in a few places. And it's one of those, like, endless distance sort of things. Well, it might as well be endless for me. I'm sure it ends eventually. But it's just like I get about 10 floors deep in this thing, and I'm just getting murdered because I cannot make my fingers do what they want on the keyboard fast enough. So yeah, gamepad all the way.
Yeah,
yeah. I have to admit this little gamepad is kind of revolutionizing a lot of the games I play. It really.
I hope that the new Xbox, the Xbox One. Did you see what they did today? They're re-releasing the original Xbox.
Yeah, right. Xbox One. Yeah.
I didn't watch I didn't watch the thing. I just watched the forum reactions of people watching the thing.
Yeah, same here.
I am completely disinterested.
Most people are. I was so amazed when people were like, "What is this? I don't want one." Ew.
See, Sony's stock jumped like in the middle of the.
Gosh.
Yeah, well, right around the time that Microsoft was confirming, because there was a Wired article that came out, and the guy had spent like all week with them last week. And couldn't reveal it till today. So he put his thing up today. The way that the online DRM, that rumor that things were online only, it's what they are doing is encouraging the developers to use Microsoft Azure Cloud as like you offload a bunch of the processing stuff up to the cloud so that – and I'm thinking, you know what? This thing is a PC. It even looks like an Acer desktop PC now.
It looks like an old VHS tape player.
Yeah. Oh, wouldn't that be cool if it was a top loader? Like the whole. But I digress. But anyway, they're trying to get the developers to offload to Azure Cloud, where it's like, you know, you can store saves up there, you can do game processing up there and whatever, and like set your multiplayer so it runs in cloud instance servers and whatnot.
Yeah.
You know what? I was sold on the PlayStation 4 in the middle of that conference.
Because it's the touchpad on the controller, right?
You were they're making a new Infamous game. That's what I care about. So, so I'm all over that. But it also
The other thing that's terrible about the Xbox, speaking of PlayStations, it's not going to be backward compatible.
Well, neither is the PlayStation. Xbox. So, you know.
Yeah, true. But, you know, but the deal breaker for the rest of the world is that whenever you buy it's going to have a Blu-ray drive in it too, right? So that's nice. But what it is they're going for, if they had asked me in 2005, like what would be the perfect successor to the Xbox? What would fulfill all the promises that we made in the first Xbox that even the 360 doesn't do? And I would have designed this thing in 2005, but they didn't ask me in 2013 what I care about. Which is a completely different feature set than what I'd have gave a shit about then. Like the HDMI, it's got HDMI pass-through from my cable box. Well, I want to get on Hulu and Netflix and stuff and stream. I'm a cable cutter. I don't have any kind of TV. But what they do is it's a pass-through from your cable box. I don't have one of those, right?
Yeah.
The redesigned Kinect, it's like, well, it couldn't get worse. So, you know, and they were like, well, we sold 8 million Kinects in the first 2 weeks. And it's like, okay, well, that's 8 million kind of grumpy people then. So, you know, hopefully better luck second time around on that.
Since we're on this tangent, which console do you own, Brendan? I have a PS3 myself.
I've got an Xbox 360. My girlfriend has a PS3 though. So we'll have to, I've got a little bit of each right now.
Nice.
So you haven't thrown down on that Wii U yet?
No, I don't have a Wii U, which is actually, this would be the first. I still have my NES from 1985.
Whoa.
And so this would be the first Nintendo, you know, console that I am not necessarily that interested in, but they got to step up their game.
Oh my God. They would hate to hear you say that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I just think that all of the consoles this generation, it's going to be bad, bad trouble for the console industry.
Yeah.
Unless the PlayStation – the problem that they had with the PlayStation the last time around was it was just such a bitch to program for that it took four years before anybody figured it out.
Did you have to deal with that at Bethesda?
No. We had PlayStation kits there and people working on PlayStation, but I always weaseled my way out of it. I hated the PlayStation. PlayStation 2 was obnoxious also.
Really?
But PlayStation 3 was way worse. Couldn't stand it. And so I was really pleased. You know, it really sounds like they're doing a great job with this new one. And the fact that it's a you know, basically kind of a PC. What a relief from my perspective.
You and just about everybody else, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I wonder, though, if it's going to be kind of Linux or a Unix-based OS that's going on under the hood there. Because God forbid that they develop their own OS.
I know.
And then make you learn that. So, you know, it's just like, come on, Linux, OpenGL, let's do it.
That'd be great, you know? Yeah. It would.
Isn't the one they currently have based on Linux? Or couldn't you put Linux on there?
It came with like Yellow Dog Linux, but then they removed support for doing that. Because what they figured out was that they were selling an excellent desktop with a Blu-ray player, and it was the best Blu-ray player on the market, and they were like, you know, giving the razor away at a loss, but not selling any blades. Right. So they thought like, hey, we're gonna make our money on the games, and nobody bought any games.
Right.
So yeah. So that's my other point about the Xbox too. The deal breaker for the rest of the world on the Xbox is the DRM scheme that's going on with the media. Because you go to the store and you buy a Blu-ray, and it's gonna be the equivalent of buying a PC game on DVD, right? Where you get home and it's a Steam voucher. And the media, like the initial download is on the disc, but it just unlocks in Steam. So that's how this is going to kind of play out on the new Xbox, is you've got the dump of the media, which must be installed to the hard drive. I hope they put more than a 20-gig hard drive in it this time.
Man.
And, you know.
500, so, I thought I read.
Oh, God, that's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
That's good, because every game is going to be 10 gigs.
Yeah.
So you figure, well, I get 5 games. Sweet. So yeah.
Do they? Do you know?
Well,
do you,
I guess it would be 50, but
do you know if they have plans for? Because I mean, Steam. You know, the thing that makes the DRM of Steam so palatable to me is just that it's so convenient to download a game from them, and that I can, you know, get one anywhere from another machine. Do they have any plans for that sort of digital stuff?
I'm sure that it will be. They don't want to talk about it right now because they're already going to make GameStop really angry.
Right.
because the deal
their
is
their stock
when you
dropped
install,
a little bit today, I think.
Well, yeah, because when you install the game on your console, it locks to the console and to your Xbox Live account. And so if your Xbox dies, I hope that we don't have to play Mother May I with Microsoft to get your games back.
Well, also, it's going to be tied to an account, and their accounts have been notoriously horrible in regards to security. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, but here's the thing. But that's why it's double authentication, right? It has to be the physical Xbox and your account. And that way you can't go to your buddy's house and log in with your account and it installs all your games.
Oh, jeez.
So the thing is, though, you can loan your buddy your game, but for him to install it, because he has to install it also on the hard drive, and then it doesn't do a media check for the DVD anymore. So what the deal is he has to pay. It's like an online pass. You know how you buy a game, but it doesn't come with multiplayer unless it had the voucher in the thing, and that gets tied to your account. It's going to be the same deal where it'll be, I don't know how much, right? Probably half the price of the game or something. Right. But it's like you buy the game, and then you install it on yours, and then if you have a second Xbox or a second account that you want to install it under, or if you resell the game, it's going to kill the resale market because they can't get margin on it. Totally. And then if it costs me $30 to relicense the game on my console, I'll just go buy it new. Thanks. So yeah, but I definitely see a download only model here because the only thing that they're doing is appeasing the retailers, you know, Walmart and such, that, yeah, there will be a box on the shelf that you can sell for $60 and, you know, but that's just going to be basically the unlock of the game, plus to save them some bandwidth that'll be on the physical media. But that'll mean like every game needs activated and patched online. So it will basically be a Steam box.
Just without the Steam.
And that has me excited for the Steam box. It's like, come on.
You can just build a Steam box now with the big picture if you wanted to.
You basically can, yeah.
I kind of want to.
I don't really feel a need to buy a console. You know, I mean, PC gaming has just been so great the past few years.
Oh, hasn't it?
You know, and just like you're talking about, plug in a controller right in there and big picture. It's like, why go back?
I think we're really in a second, like I think the PC's first golden age, PC gaming's first golden age, was like the mid to late 90s.
Yeah, totally.
Because, oh my God. But I think you have a second one now thanks to indies like you who are making just so much good stuff. I mean, you have FTL. You've got, you know, all these Kickstarters that are doing great.
And I'll say also, because of the Bethesda reference here, the modding community. Mm. I mean, like, my God, look what people have done for Morrowind and such. So it's a thing of, like, the modding community, because people come in the door with mods. And then they end up – I know several people in the game industry now full time that came in just as modders. You know, it's like, oh, well, I like Tribes, but I want to put like force fields in there. I want to add a new gun or whatever, right? And it was like with World of Warcraft doing the user interface stuff for that. And, you know, the guy that did that, he built the stuff for the guild that I was in. And then his mod got real popular, and then he ended up working for Cryptic and worked on the UI for Star Trek Online and Champions. Oddly, he ejected out of Cryptic and went into mobile games after that.
Which sounds like a crapshoot.
So, he's in that space. Oh, no. There's social mobile stuff. So kind of like Zynga, but less assholes.
Which isn't too hard.
So you said you worked on some mobile games. What did you work on, Brendan?
I worked on this. I don't know if you're familiar. This game called Touch Pets it's like a virtual pet simulator. Which I don't know if you remember Pets from, like, I think that was the late 90s.
I love those.
This guy Andrew Stern is kind of been doing he's kind of been doing like AI driven gameplay. And he also made this game called Facade. Do you remember Facade? It was like a little just a project. It wasn't even a full game. It was this game where you can you play someone who's attending a dinner party, and you type in what you want to say to the characters. And it's sort of this classic, because it didn't work 100% and it was kind of wonky, but it was fun. And sort of this classic, great for YouTube videos. So I worked with him and some other people here in Portland. And, those are the projects we worked on, sort of virtual pets.
Those are always popular, though.
Oh, they're fun. You know, it's not something that I played, but my sister, who is works at a college, she would tell me about how all of the college students there had their own little virtual cats and virtual dogs, and you know, they were very impressed. They weren't so impressed that I worked on Fallout, but they were impressed about the dog thing. So,
well, if you played Skyrim, I have to ask about that.
Oh yeah, Skyrim was awesome, right?
I just started playing it like a couple months ago because I got it in a deal, and holy crap!
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It's funny, you know, I've been following, I've got a vested interest, you know, in following people's reactions to Skyrim, and, you know, eventually the game started to get...
Did you do any work on that one before you left?
No. I was out long before that.
Oh, okay.
Although I hear that some of my code is still in there, which is very gratifying.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's fun. But those first few hours in Skyrim, when you're walking around and you see, like, butterflies flying around and indigenous life, and it's so beautiful. I mean, there's no game that's better at that kind of exploration.
No, I have not found a game like that since maybe Daggerfall, and Daggerfall didn't do it that well as well.
No, not that well.
You're just walking around. You're walking toward a quest. And what's that thing over there? That weird looking building. Let's check it out. Oh, here's another quest. Want me to go into this building? All right.
Yeah, that's why that compass at the top that highlights where things are, you know, like when you get close to a cave, it puts a little icon up there. That is my curse, man. You know, I never get anywhere because it's like, ooh, a squirrel.
Oh, yeah.
Squirrel. Yeah, no, I'm totally all about the, like, ooh, what's this cave I have not explored yet? What's over here? So if you can even get a fraction of that kind of exploration awesomeness into Rodina. Oh.
I mean, that would be, yeah, from your mouth to God's ears, man. That'd be great.
So is this going to be just PC? Are you planning on other platforms as well?
I mean, you know, PC at first, I was kind of interested, you know, when the Wii U first came out, they were talking about how the dev kits were really cheap and how they had this really indie friendly policy, you know, so, you know, I'm not sure that'll be where I go next, but you never know.
Because I don't know. I've been surprised at how well Mac gaming is doing, how much better it's like.
Oh, yeah?
These games are coming out. Because I have a Mac laptop for work, and now like GOG is making all these Mac games available and stuff. And like,
Valve's doing more there than they used to, right?
They are. There's quite a few Mac games on there, and a lot of indie devs are making their games available on all three platforms.
Yeah, yeah. Well, who knows? That you know, one of the things that sort of might be a shoot myself in the foot moment was the game's DirectX based right now, because that's just what I'm more familiar with. So I would need to rewrite a portion of it. But, you know, it might be worth it. And like you say, a lot of games are coming out on all three. I think to be in the Humble Bundles, not that I'm saying that that's what I'm aiming for, but I think all those games, you know, need to be on all platforms. So that's something that, you know, might be worth looking into for sure.
I don't know if they require that, but yeah, a lot of them seem to be multi-platform. Mm. A lot of them do, at least.
I do know that whenever they do that, the Linux users are always the most generous because they're just so grateful. To
like, oh my god, a new game for Linux! Thank you, thank you so much.
Yeah,
I tried Linux once. It wasn't for me. It just wasn't. It wasn't. I really tried. I really did.
Yeah, I dove off the cliff really hard this weekend because the place that I work at, I get a lot of support cases that'll come in for like Oracle. And then with Oracle, well, most people don't buy Oracle Unix because it's crazy expensive. So what they do is they'll run like Red Hat Enterprise Linux. And then the guy that I sit next to is actually an escalation engineer from Red Hat who defected and came over to us. Hmm. So, and I'm at a storage company that I won't name, but there's only a few. Right. So, but anyway, so he came over to us, and I'm thinking, well, I got this guy who's basically the god of Red Hat sitting right next to me. So if there's ever a time to immerse and learn this thing, this is it. They gave me a Lenovo laptop. I don't really have a lot good to say about Lenovo after my experience with this thing. The SSD likes to disappear at random. It just plays peekaboo and I'll be in the middle of using it, and I can't decide whether it's an operating system problem or is it a problem with the hardware. But I'm going to find out. So what I did is it had Windows 7 on it, and I would be running stuff, and then like half of my open windows would just freeze. And I couldn't tell, like, had the hard drive like disappeared out from under the apps and the ones that tried to read it choked or what, but it was always a hard boot, and it would always happen when I was on the phone with a customer, and their soft phone system requires that I actually initiate the calls through the computer. The computer actually hooks to the phone and it makes the connection and stuff, which is really goofy. So it was this deal, like, if my computer goes down, I'm done, and I have to reboot, and then, oh God, now it doesn't find the SSD and I'm down, and I work the weekend shift. There's no tech support guy there on the weekend to rebuild my shit. And it's just like, you know what? The trust relationship with this computer is now zero because it screwed me like 4 weeks in a row. It'll do it to me at least once over the weekend. And this was like the second go around this weekend, and I was just like, "Fine, screw you." I pulled out the Red Hat disk and formatted it, because it's like, well, I can't take calls anyway, so I might as well do something constructive with the rest of my day, right?
That's cool.
So so I spent all day Monday getting things like the corporate email to work, and our chat system, and just all those corporate things. That Linux is a desktop. They fully support MacBooks there. I want to ask them for a MacBook, but I need to learn Linux, so I might as well take my lumps, right? But it's just the thing of, like, every time I try to learn Linux, this is why I bounce off, because I'll run into some insurmountable hurdle that's just like, I got a Mac sitting right here and it does this beautifully. Why should I struggle with this? Do I hate myself? So, yeah. But the thing that I ran into with the T530 is it's got an NVIDIA graphics card in it, and Red Hat doesn't have good support for the NVIDIA graphics. So it was like, it's fine as long as I run it just single monitor, but I've got a 4-monitor setup. As soon as I drop that dude in my dock, the laptop just freaks out. Yeah.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, well, as soon as I dock the laptop, it just freaks out.
Oh man.
It can't deal with it. And the reason why is because it mode switches that NVIDIA chip, and it's just the driver for NVIDIA can't deal with it. And they won't open source the driver. It has to be closed source, and they just don't really support Linux right. On Ubuntu probably it'd work, but that's a whole different animal. But yeah. So that's kind of where I'm at. Is like I'm trying to pretend it's a Mac really hard.
Yeah, and I imagine once you go 4 monitors, you're not about to go backwards on that. So
absolutely, given the type of work that I do, I need them. I couldn't imagine going, like, if I had a Mac and the guy that sits next to me, he uses a Mac actually. Go figure, he's a Red Hat guy and he uses a Mac all day, but he only has one external monitor. On like a 15-inch MacBook, but the Mac virtual desktoping is so seamless because you just take a 3-finger swipe left or right and you change desktops.
Yeah, it is actually really nice.
Yeah, I use that continuously. Like I threw down the money to buy a Magic Trackpad here at the house just so I can use that gesture without having to open the thing up. So yeah, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting challenge. But I could get away with one external monitor if I had a decent virtual desktop thing that was seamless like that. But what I'm finding is they have taken Linux in the opposite of a productive direction with the new desktop environments. KDE Plasma ain't bad, but it's not quite there. Like, I can't redefine the keys, and I can't make mouse gestures to switch desktops and do things like that. And it's also, I'm in the very beginning stages of it, so it's super foreign. and I know the command line, but I don't want to work at the command line. So that's kind of where I'm at. I will report back in maybe a month and let you know if I survived.
I hope so. You're the one that records these things. You better survive.
Yeah.
Damn.
I have to say, one of the nice things about being a games programmer is, you know, I've been mostly working on Windows and a little bit of Mac throughout my career. And, you know, I feel like if I had been a web programmer, I'd be deep in Linux at this point. And I'm sort of glad I haven't had to dive in too badly.
Yeah, I don't know what either of you are talking about.
Well, do you do a lot of stuff with OpenGL, or is it all DirectX?
I do. For this game, it's all DirectX. I've done OpenGL, but it's all DirectX right now.
Okay. What's the difference between, let's say you're going to render a geometric thing, like a D20, right, a 20-sided polygon in space. Mm-hmm. How do you define that thing in DirectX versus OpenGL? Well, because OpenGL, it's just a straight coordinates thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about OpenGL to really say definitively, but I mean, I think they're pretty similar in terms of the basic feature set. You define vertices and you give them coordinates, and you know you combine them into triangles, and you just give it the information. It's more about how you do it and what other features are supported. But the basic stuff is always pretty, you know, it's one, yeah. you just gotta pick it up. It's a pretty similar you know, system.
Yeah,
someone out there is going to be like, "What are you talking about? OpenGL is completely different from DirectX." But you know, it's just one of those things. You just got to learn it and then use it.
Yeah, but it's no matter which path you take, there's like I would assume quite a stock of pre-built libraries to draw from, right? So it's not like you're building everything from scratch.
I mean, I'm not so sure about that. I know OpenGL has extensions, and I'm not really sure how those are used even. But DirectX is you pretty much go from the ground up. You know, they give you an SDK, and you pretty much build. I've never used a DirectX library. Let me put it that way. Everything I do is you know, just using DirectX and my own code. So I think you know that really it's just about learning the tools and learning how to put them together and use them properly.
Yeah, I guess where that's coming from is I'm looking at if somebody wants to be truly cross-platform, like the guys that do the humble indie bundle things, right?
Yeah.
So you figure, well, DirectX isn't going to work on any platform but a Microsoft one, so you better write the thing with OpenGL. But I'm wondering about also, like, if you have to convert something that was originally in DirectX to another platform, like we're going to the Mac, we're going to Linux. Mac and Linux are probably somewhat similar, being as it's yeah. Unix under the hood. But like, you know, Windows system being non-POSIX is going to be a completely different animal. So I just wonder, like, at the challenge of that, of trying to be multi-platform on a small dev team. Right?
Yeah.
Like look at like Notch, right? If him and the Mojang guys are like, yeah, we're going to put this out on you know, like Mac and Linux and Android and iOS and everything.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, so I think like new systems like Unity are really great for things like that. And engines, that, you know, people have been coming up with that are a little more cross platform. I've never used Unity, but by all accounts, it's really amazing and, really easy to get going and, you know, really create something cool with. I'm making Rodin. It's all my own engine, and it's kind of crazy in programming. You know, it's often said that that's like the stupid decision, that you don't want to reinvent the wheel. You know, especially when you have an engine, you know, something like Unity that you can just take off the shelf and use. That you'd be an idiot not to do so. You know, for me, I think it's been great to do my own engine because I can do, you know, the technical features, and I'm not sure that Unity could handle what I'm doing. Although it might be able to, but you know, I really enjoy being able to like do it all top to bottom and, you know, give it, it makes it unique. It makes the game unique. So, you know, but that's not to say that, you know, for someone else, like I would say that, an engine, especially something like Unity, could be like a really good decision.
Yeah, a lot. I'm sorry. I'm just going to say a lot of indie devs that I'm aware of are using Unity.
Yeah.
A lot of them.
Well, and it makes that cross-platform stuff so easy, and it makes getting up and running so easy. It's really, in most cases, it's a no-brainer.
So if I was going to pick up, like, what do you write in the game in? Like, C#, C++?
What? I do most of the engine code, or all the engine code's in C++.
Okay. So if I was going to pick up a, learn to program games in C++ book, you know, because I write, scripting language stuff, like Perl and a little bit of PowerShell and that kind of thing, but I've never actually, rendered out graphics in 3D or anything like that. Right. What's an entry point into that world?
Oh, man. That's tough. I would say there's got to be good tutorials online. That's how I usually learn things. I don't buy books very often, because I find that when I get a book, more often than not, it's just a restating of what's in the docs.
And it's probably out of date by the time it's on the shelf, too.
Yeah. I think in a lot of cases, if you're able to read a document and specification and learn from it, that's probably what you need. And then the internet, my very first 3D demo, the very first one I ever did, was in college, and it was based off a tutorial that I got on the internet. Just search for how to program in DirectX 8, I think it was back then, just, following a basic tutorial, just getting that first triangle on the screen. This engine, I first got my first triangle on screen about a year and a half ago. And once you do that, everything else just kind of comes naturally. It's just about getting excited enough to keep looking into it. So I'm sorry, that's not a good answer, but I've never...
it actually is pretty deep, because that was going to be the next question is, well, how did you do it? How did you bootstrap yourself in? So
yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I've never had I've never learned much from a how to program book. I went to college for computer science, so that certainly got me off on the right footing. And actually, knowing that I wanted to make games in college, once you get up to the upper levels, the 400 level classes, I took, classes in artificial intelligence and graphics and compiler design. So, I was sort of educated to be ready for this stuff, but I think anybody with the internet, especially, there's so much out there. I'm sure anybody who's dedicated can do it like I did.
So, so you didn't actually go to DeVry and get that degree where it's like, hey man, pass me the controller, I got to tighten up the graphics on.
Tighten up the graphics. Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah. If only I could program just solely with a controller on my couch, that would be great. That'd be my job. Yeah,
that'd be ridiculous, though.
Yeah. Oh my God. I have to say the popular conception of what a game developer's life is like is pretty fantastic. People for years, I don't know if you guys ever saw this movie Grandma's Boy.
No.
This is a terrible movie. It was hilarious, but it was a movie about pot smokers making video games, and it just couldn't have been more simple and playing into the popular stereotypes. But for years, it was the one anybody who heard that I made games were like, oh, is it like Grandma's Boy? And it's like, no, it's nothing like that. But it's still a lot of fun. I'm super lucky. And, one of the great things about what I'm doing is I get to work from home, which is just amazing. Right. I was just so great. So, I couldn't be happier with how the real world game development life is treating me.
Well, that's awesome. But you are, like you said, you have a hard, date where you're going to start needing more capital. And so you're going to need to start selling, Rodina.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be coming up sooner rather than later. I don't know when the exact date will be, but, hopefully sometime soon.
Well, I think if you could do it over the summer, because even though they're spacing game releases out more this year, it seems, than usual, they're not putting them all at Christmas.
Yeah.
There's still going to be a glut this summer. So if I could just chime in a suggestion, that would be mine.
Yeah, that'd be really great. And I'd also, I'm trying to get into PAX in late August. And so, it'd be great to have a finished product done by then. But, we'll have to see. Yeah, sooner the better. That's for sure.
Right. All right, well, I think we're going to wrap this up because I've been drinking a little too much wine while we're talking, and it's made me a little sleepy.
Oh, boy, I hope that wasn't me. Jeez.
No, it totally wasn't you. It's the wine. This is
all sleep. Right.
It's a sleepy wine
that my girlfriend
has given me. But, Brendan, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come on and talk to us about Rodina. I can't wait to play. I'm super excited to play this thing. I have been since I first heard about it. What was it, last year?
Late last year.
Yeah. And I just want to thank you for not only making this game, but being so passionate about it, because you can just tell how passionate you are about it.
So I appreciate that. Super excited. Well, Brian, I want to say thank you so much, man. And it's funny, I was listening to your podcast the other day where you mentioned that you guys were talking to, and you mentioned Rodina and how we had communicated and how I had been, you know, really appreciative that you were following the game, because you've been you're one of the sites that's been like posting updates and following it. And you were like, duh, obviously. but it's to, you know, from my perspective, it's not that way at all. You know, like I'm just some dude in an apartment working by myself. So it's totally thrilling to be here talking to you guys. So thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you. And I can't wait till you give us a spaceship to fly around in. That's the exciting part. That's why I'm excited about it. It's awesome. Spaceships. Jim, thank you so much for everything as always. And
it's a pleasure.
And folks,
sounds like Jim's had too much wine too.
Well, he's on the East Coast. So it's a lot later over there, folks, thanks for listening. Please follow us on the RSS and the iTunes and the Twitters and the Facebooks. And we'll talk to you next week.
I was just in the midst of saying, you know, like, oh, it's always a pleasure. And then I thought, oh, God, that's what they say at Chick-fil-A.
Is it?
Like if they don't say my pleasure, they actually get, like, hit with a cattle prod because there's, like, a little midget behind the window.
See, I hate Chick-fil-A and not even politics. I just hate their food. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, I can't stand that.
Well, we're done here.
I had no idea either.
I don't know what magic they inject into those chicken breasts. It's probably some kind of radioactive something, but it is good.
Well, I'm fortunate that there aren't a lot of them here in Southern California, so I don't have to deal with it. But back east, yeah, they were freaking everywhere. Yeah, anyway.
He wrote an interesting story about how he started out with, like, just a small mom-and-pop restaurant. It was called, like, the Gnome House or something, and then built that into Chick-fil-A kind of thing. It was, I forget what the, it was, like, eat more chicken and inspire more people or something was his autobiography. It was an interesting read. So, well, there's nice. That. Hey, so let me leave you with a gift.
Okay.
This movie from 2008, it's because we started out talking about Bobcat's Sleeping Dogs movie. This is the companion to that my wife made me watch. It's called Control-Alt-Delete. It is from 2008.
What?
And it's got Tyler Labine in it. Ooh. And it was actually written and directed by his brother Cameron Labine.
Who?
Tyler Labine. He was in Tucker and Dale versus Evil. And
oh, I've not seen that. Stuff. But I heard that was good. Yeah,
it's okay. Well, anyway, so the tagline for this movie, and I won't say any more, is when your computer is your only friend, why not go all the way?
Oh, God. I bet someone said that in the movie. Okay.
Yeah, this movie will blow your mind.
Probably not going to
watch.
You'll
just be like, how did that get made?
Well, gentlemen, anyway. I'm going to bid you a good night.
Right.
I don't know when you cut that off, Jim. We didn't have a hard end, but whatever.
Oh, it's still running. So, you know, just end it.
It's still running? You're still going?
It's out of its
God
business.
Damn it.
Put a bullet in its head.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
Thanks, guys.